it's 3 o'clock. I'd like to get the community services meeting going. I'm Councilwoman Diller, and we are joined around the table by council members Kilpatrick and Sheldon and Woods and Street and Weiner and Smiley and my aide, Sue Moore. So we are, and Councilman Cartier has just joined us. So may I have a motion on the minutes?
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Hansen, will you and your staff take it away on revamp?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Sophia Hansen, Department of Community Services. We came here a couple months ago, and we were talking, we actually were addressing another agenda item, and vacant properties came up. And I think everyone in the room said,
sure,
we want you to go out and come up with some new ideas to address vacant properties in the county. And revamp is a product we came up with, a new program that we think will really help get us there. And Norman Spector, our expert, is going to make the presentation.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. You want to test those down?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what we've laid out for you. Revamp, mediating vacancies, making progress. We brought some brochures for you, and as you have them out, we'll go through it. Why revamp? According to the Department of Land Use, 1,287 vacant properties are in Newcastle County. Vacant Housing Working Group was created. It was an internal working group to bring key stakeholders together to develop strategies to address and reduce vacant, abandoned, and blighted properties. And that's how we came up with revamp, because one of those identified strategies. We at one time had the VAP, Vacant Homebuyers Assistance Program, that operated between 2011 and 2014. So it was a federal funds with great success. A lot of people say, well, the programs that you have, how many vacancies were there, how many actually went to bankruptcy, and things like that. Well, out of 225 VAP loans that we settled, 223 remained owner-occupied, means two, only two either went into Chapter 7 or went into foreclosure, which is great, which is a great odds. Our programs work. What is revamp? It was created to promote homeownerships and to stimulate sales of vacant properties throughout Newcastle County. It provides a forgivable down payment and settlement consistent loans to qualified homebuyers who are purchasing a vacant home in identified areas in Newcastle County. And I believe it was 36 census tracts in Newcastle County. The identified areas are low to moderate census tracts, and that is by HUD standards. We didn't create anything, it's all by HUD.
Very good.
Okay.
We're back.
How is revamp?
Let me see, is that right?
Yeah. How is revamp funded? Its funding is from the fiscal year 2017 Newcastle County Department of Community Services budget from savings identified from the delay of the opening of the Route 9 library. There's a map.
Oh, I hope. That's hot.
Did you bring the big map? I forgot the big map. Okay.
What is everything?
The purple is where the revamp areas are. And it stretches from Claymont down to Middletown. It goes from east to from Route 9 corridor all the way into Pike Creek. So it's a lot of identified areas throughout Newcastle County. 36 of them. So it's a great deal.
Madam Chair?
Lisa. Yes.
Thank you. May I ask a question?
Sure.
Thank you. Is it possible for us to get a map electronically that overlays the council districts?
Absolutely. This map actually does do it, but we'll get you a bigger map so you can see.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Revamp qualifications. Maximum selling price is $397,500. And how we came up with that, is the FHA limit on sale of properties, not something we created. Property condition. Property must be inspected by an ASHI or a NAHI or InterNACHI certified home inspector as a condition of the sale. We feel in the Community Services Department, and I guess you do too, is that a knowledgeable homeowner is a qualified homeowner. I think education is really important. And Home must be certified by a seller as 90 days vacant, and any home built after 1978 must have a lead-based paint visual inspection. We all hear about horror stories with paint, lead-based paint in the city of Wilmington. Outside, anything that prior to 1978 may contain it. We want the homeowner to know whether there is or not. It does not have to be mediated. We just want the buyer to know if it's clean or not clean.
No, excuse me.
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just clarify me, because I'm confused with your terms. But it says built after, but then I thought you just heard you say, okay, we want to make sure homeowner's home
built, built before. Prior. That's a misprint. It's built prior to 1978.
Okay.
Okay. I'm looking at that going, that's not right.
But you just didn't want to say anything. Okay, fine.
Okay, well, I'll just
take this off. If that's the numbers, I'll never pick that up.
Okay, so anything built prior to 1978 must have a lead-based paint inspection.
Okay.
Okay, rehab financing term. This is a good part. Loan amount, up to $5,000. Interest rate, 0%. FHA 203K program permissible. What is a 203K program? FHA has the 203K program where if you buy a house for $150,000 and you need $50,000 worth of repairs, you can add that $50,000 into your loan amount. So that will be part of your loan. So now you're borrowing $200,000 on that property. It's a great idea. And the mortgage companies actually control one. It's about 6 month time limit on repairs. But it's a great way. Vacant properties, we all know, they need some repairs. This is a great program to work with, to manage with it. What happens if the borrower lives in a property for 5 years? The loan is totally forgiven. So it is 20% each year is deducted from the mortgage amount, and after 5 years, it's totally forgiven. The debt to income DTI is ratio must be at 52% or below. That sounds high. Debt to income at 52. FHA allows a 57% debt to income on any home you're buying. We feel going to 52 on a four-person household making $96,360, that'll give them an extra $500 a month to live on, rather than going to the max of 57. We feel that's great. That's mortgage companies will be really kind of upset with us because of the 52, because they like to go stretch everybody to the max. We're bringing that down. Okay, income. Total household income may not exceed 120% of median income. We give you the scale right there. That was set in March of 2016. That changes every year, mostly. So when we get the changes, we'll let everybody know what the updates are. To qualify, you do not have to be a first-time home buyer. We realize that during the mortgage crisis, a lot of people lost their homes. We want people to be proactive in buying these vacant properties and possibly fixing them up with a 203K. Borrower must be certified as having completed a home ownership education program with a Newcastle County recognized HUD-approved housing counseling agency. And the housing counseling agency actually takes the application for Newcastle County. Again, an educated borrower is a qualified borrower. That's how we feel about it. Any questions on this slide? There's a lot of information on that.
Thanks.
Okay.
I just have one that I want to make sure, because it kind of made me flinch. The FHA, the amount, when you're buying the 150, it's valued at 150,000.
No, it's valued at the approved price, improved price. It'll be valued at 200.
Okay, that's the one there, because right away I'm thinking, well, oh, that's nothing new. That's what the banks did. That's why we ended up where we were.
No,
they gave more money the house was worth.
No, it'll be.
But so that, and that's what I was wondering. The reason they're saying if you can only substantiate that you got 20,000, then it's 20,000 you can get that's going to bring it up to the actual value once the repairs are completed. Okay.
There's actually an engineer that goes out and does the estimate on the price of their homes, and they come up with it. And the bank has to approve it and has to go through this process.
No.
But yes,
that's improved. That's why, I mean, you're going into the home and need repairs. You get the house and you don't have the money to fix it. So we sell them a house that they can't get a certificate of occupancy to live in. So no, makes sense. I was just concerned. I was having flashbacks. That's all.
I'd like to recognize that Council Members Bell and Tackett and Hollins have joined us. Councilman Tackett, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This question came up, and I'm sure the definition's out there, but I really wasn't sure when I was asked at a community meeting. But when you talk about six people in a household, you know, kids go to college, they're in a lot longer, does that mean under 18, or does it just mean actual in the household?
We're looking at people with income, household income. So if that college student does not have any income, it won't count against them. However, if you are a college student and you are making money, FHA says we can only count $400 of that income towards household income. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
Well, you're on the wrong leg of the dog. Okay. I actually meant the...
Why you have to pick on the dog?
You would say that.
The person in the household. So the college student is a person because they're in the household.
You're correct.
They're over
here. Correct.
Okay. And then secondly, Norm, what outreach are we doing, Sophia, for the real estate agents? Because when I went out a couple of times, and I have a few, they told me that they really weren't aware of this, and they have to have something.
We haven't launched it yet. We're here for to you first.
I thought it was in the paper or something.
We had a launch, but we haven't brought the product out yet. We wanted to bring it to council first. It's not really going to come out until October 5th. You vote on it, hopefully. So that's why we're here, and that's why the realtors don't know it. Outreach is up to me, and I'll be out there with the realtors letting them know. Most of the mortgage bankers know about it. Housing counselors know about it. It's the real estate agents that we have to outreach to.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick and then Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. Since you first rolled this out a couple of weeks ago, I've been to a couple of civic meetings and talked about this because obviously every district has a census tract in it. The realtors that are at those meetings, because they happen to live in the communities, are asking if there is any way that they can come up with a list of where the vacancies are, whether it would be through you or through the Department of Land Use, because we do keep track of those. Because they said, with a program like this, they believe that they could lead people to those vacant houses rather than the vacant housing just happening to be found by somebody that's looking around.
It's a plus and minus. Most of the vacant properties that we have are not listed on the multi-list. They're bank owned.
Yes, but we keep track in Newcastle County,
and this is a land use thing to work with them.
But we have a vacant housing list within the Department of Land Use that I don't know how public that is, but if there's a way that somehow it could be targeted even on parcel view or something.
Sophia Hansen, Community Services. I just made a note. We can get that, and we're doing the marketing with the brochure describing the program for the realtors. We'll also provide that map information, and it'll be electronic, because that's the easiest way you can zoom in. But we'll do some kind of email blast and get it up on our website as a part of our launching. But we can't officially promote anything until after you appropriate the funding. So this is really good. So we'll do it right the first time. We'll provide that along with the product information.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Councilman Weiner?
Thank you. May I suggest that you work with the real estate section of the Delaware State Bar Association? In fact, electronically, if you contact the Delaware State Bar, the chairman of the real estate section can blast it out to his section. They may be able to pinpoint some issues legally. They're certainly going to be on the front line in preparing the settlements, so it's certainly they're a partner.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions?
Anyone else? Councilman
Tackett. Madam Chair, Norm, just to be clear, are we just by areas or zip codes?
Census tracts.
They're identified
on the
codes, right?
No.
Census tracts.
U.S. Census.
All right. Before, Carrie, you've done stuff with zip codes.
Right, that was
NSP. That was NSP 1 went to zip codes, then NSP 2 and 3 both went to census tracts.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Councilman Meyer.
Thank you. Is any of Lancaster Pike in Council District 2 census tracts included?
Here, do you have the list?
It's in your packet. It's in your packet.
Okay. That's identified by another gang. I'm not sure. I can't prepare for woman Dilla telling her that Brookside is there.
Thank you. But I have Councilman Smiley here.
I just want to say, I've been putting this out since that was presented initially, telling people it doesn't really become effective, isn't available to in October. Very little pushback from communities, and absolutely none once you present to them what we all know in-house, but a lot of them don't, and that is the $5,000 maximum that we will put forward to a house. If someone buys that, we will recover that in the savings of police responses, code enforcement, abatement, contractors cutting the grass, keeping the home secure. That $5,000 is nothing compared to what we expend on an individual house in an annual. And once you put it in that perspective, you know, aside from that, the home ownership is the selling point. The fact that somebody's not going to invest it, get it, rent it, walk, you know, walk away. So, good program. I certainly wish you well. Matter of fact, I look forward to us having it be such a positive thing that we additionally fund it down the road. So, thank you very much.
Councilman Hollins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The point about the funding available due to the later than anticipated opening of the library. Can I have a little bit more information around that, please?
Absolutely. We originally planned for the library to open in June. So we had staffing costs for, you know, February all the way till June. We're in the building getting ready and expenses for programming. We're not opening until September of 2017. So all that money was sitting there in a budget, and we knew we weren't going to be able to use it. So when we came to council and you said you want to see something for house, you know, around vacant property, we said this would be a great opportunity to reallocate funds that would just be sitting there and put them to use to actually create some type of productive, strategic remediation for our vacant property issue. And I'm going to a conference, Carrie's going and Sheena's going, we're going a vacant property conference, and some people from land use are going.
In this country?
In Denmark.
Okay.
In Baltimore.
Councilman Smalley.
And it's everybody from around the world. It's the same people who took us to Harvard for the center. It's the Center for Community Progress. And these numbers aren't going to decrease. And that 1,200 number he has, that's not, we all know, it's not the actual number. It's really scary. If we don't start creating something to lower these numbers, it's just going to keep going up. So we thought this was the best use of that funding.
Yeah, I applaud that, and I think it's very creative. As I said at the announcement there a few weeks ago, but I knew that the money was coming from someplace in your shop. I just didn't realize it was coming from the source where it's coming from. And I guess the next question would be, when do we put it back, and where does it come from?
Well, the library is not open. Sophia Hansen Community Services.
At some point, it will open.
Right, but it opens in a different fiscal year.
Right. So where's the money going to come from for the next fiscal year? You're going to add that into
it'll be in our. It would have been in the budget anyway. We do a 2018 budget, and you assume operations of the library. We just don't have these few months ahead that we thought we would have. The opening got pushed back by construction delays.
Okay.
So that worked out well. But while we're on the subject of funding, this is only $100,000. So looking in our budget for next year, for land use, our department or capital funds, we have to come up with something if we're going to be serious about lowering the number of vacant properties for additional funding. But this was something we found that we were just able to do.
Councilman Street has been very patient.
It ain't $100,000. It's the point. I'm sick and tired of being the Rodney Dangerfield of this council and this government. You know, I fought with everything I had to get to the library. And there's a whole lot of places and housing everywhere else $100,000 could have been taken from. And I don't know about this until I look at it. It ain't $100,000, it's the point. I can't get common courtesy and respect that everybody else gets, but when the administration wants something, I'm usually one of the first people they call. So, you know, I appreciate the initiative. I do not appreciate the continued disrespect. And it ain't the $100,000. It's the point of it. And it's not the first time. I'm the only person sitting on this council that had legislation I wanted to table. And y'all overruled me that night because somebody in the administration went whispering in people's ears, we got to have the job. And the hell with him. Okay, but at some point in time, to hell with me, I'm gonna be seven. And everybody that wants to keep on treating me like I'm Mr. Dangerfield, when it matters, I'll use my seven to let everybody know I'm not gonna keep on playing that role and function.
I'd like to take responsibility for that. It was my idea. We sat down and looked at the budget and looked at where we might have money from that we wouldn't be using.
Whoever's idea it is, don't make it go away.
I'd like to apologize for that. But we won't be using the money for Route 9 because it's not opening, so it doesn't take anything away from the project.
Obviously, you are missing my whole point. It ain't the $100,000. It's the common courtesy and respect. I bet you, if it was anybody else's district and you're taking $100,000 out of, that person would at least have a conversation. And it wouldn't have come from you, it would have come from the exec. But I'm just sitting here. But at some point in time, me being seven will matter.
Any other concerns about or comments regarding revamp?
Now, I just want to say again, thank you. I think it's a good program. I look forward to it, and I'll be interested to see how quickly 20 houses can fly off the shelf and make room for the next 20.
Me too.
Moving on to the Workforce Housing Annual Report. Thank you, Liz Rizzo.
I look at it like everything else. It'll be over when it's done.
Good afternoon, everyone. Stephanie Rizzo. I am the Workforce Housing Assistant Community Services Administrator. So I'm here for our annual report to council about what we've been doing last year regarding workforce housing. So Sheena is passing out our report with all of our annual monitoring reports and so on. So we'll get started. For anyone that's new, or may have forgotten what is workforce housing, it's a voluntary partnership, with the developers. There's no federal, state, or county money. The developers receive some density bonuses and some relief from the county code when they had agreed to provide this affordable housing. The workforce housing is interspersed throughout the community, and it targets households that make less than 80% or less than 120% area median income. Just like NORMS programs, everyone who participates in the workforce housing has to complete an 8-hour housing counseling through a HUD-approved agency. Also, you don't have to be a first-time home buyer. We get that question often. You can actually own another home. If you're renting your other home, then that is considered as part of your household income. And you may also combine this program with other Newcastle County loan programs. None of our developments are in any of these identified census tracts, so mostly the one program that they would use is the Down Payment Settlement and Assistance Program, but that would be for households that make less than 80% AMI. So this is the updated income chart, so just to give you an idea, we always like to use a household number of four, so for a household of four, to be considered less than 80% AMI, you have to make less than $64,250. And then if you're less than 120% AMI, you're making less than $96,360. We also, an important point to make is that we use adjusted gross income. So that goes by, your salary. Someone might make $60,000, but they have, 401k pre-tax, they get their health benefits taken out pre-tax. So their income, they may qualify. So if someone says, I make $60,000, I won't qualify. There's a possibility that they might qualify because our program goes by adjusted gross income. So So of the 133 applications we received in this past fiscal year, this shows you, 32.1% made less than 80% AMI. 24.7% made less than 120%, more than 81%. 29% were not approved, and we still have 9.2 pending. So that's people that haven't given me all of their income documents and things like that. The 29% that are not approved, that doesn't mean that they were over income. You know, I may have approved them. There may have been a house in Bayberry, and there's three families that are applying for it. Three of them may have, been qualified, but only two of them, only one of them was chosen. So that's why that number might be a little higher. So just to show you the increase in applications that we've received, through the fiscal years, it is increasing. The increase has not been as significant as it has been previously, but it is increasing each year. And then also, something else to keep in mind is, the percentage increase the percentage isn't as high, but annually, we have to monitor home buyers for 15 years. So these people that have purchased, I'm still monitoring them for 15 years, so it's a lot of people. So we do have some new developments that have come on from last year. So these are the developments that we've inspected for the annual monitoring. So there's Bayberry North, Darley Green, Emblem at Christiana, Goldsboro Farms, High Hook Farms, Ironside Crossing, Merritt Landing, Ponds of Odessa, Preserve at Robinson Farm, and Reserve at Beck's Pond. So we'll get started with Bayberry North. Bayberry North is located in Middletown. It's on Boyd's Corner Road. According to their agreement, they're allowed to offer rentals and for sale units on-site or off-site to households up to 120% AMI. Currently, they're offering on-site rentals. There are 951 total homes planned in Bayberry. There's 176 open space. 39 units are to be workforce housing. A lot of people kind of get confused sometimes because they're like, oh, workforce housing, I thought it's supposed to be 20%. Well, 20% of 951 units, is like 190 units. They had submitted a re-subdivision plan, so they only had to do 20% of their increase from their re-subdivision plan. So that's why there's only 39 units. And then that's how it's broken down, is four of them are single-family detached, 13 of them are these two-story attached, and 22 of them are three-story attached. And then also with Bayberry North, there's a future town center with retail and office space that's proposed. So this is a picture of their single-family detached house. It's approximately 2,100 square feet, four bedrooms, two and a half baths, two-car garage. It's currently renting for $19.50 a month. It is an increase by $50 last year, but that's because they've included now the sewer fees into the rent. So now the rent, the tenant's not responsible for the sewer fees. But according to the code, they could charge up to $2,270 a month for a three-bedroom house.
Who's making the extra?
This is their two-story attached house. They call it the carriage house. It's 1810 square feet, three bedrooms, two and a half baths, one car garage. It's renting for $15.50 for a townhouse. The max they can charge is $21.40 a month. So they're well below that. This is their three-story attached house, about 1800 square feet. Very similar, three bedrooms, two and a half baths. All their appliances are included. They also actually include all of the window treatments because the developer, the builder thinks, if they do the window treatments, then tenants aren't going to be like hanging sheets up in the windows or things like that. So they're charging $14.50 per month, and the max again they can charge is $21.40 a month. So the current status of housing for Bayberry North, there's currently, about 23 units that have been occupied. That's the breakdown of them. There's two that are currently under construction that will be available soon. So they're about 64% complete of their workforce housing unit.
Lisa.
Councilwoman Patrick.
I have a question about the sewer fee, that they raised it $50 a month to, and it covers the sewer fee. When I had six people living in my house, my sewer fee was in the $400 range.
Mm-hmm.
So they're making $600, somebody's making $600 a year off of this rental, which sounds to me like this is a way of pocketing more money, unless they're giving a refund back when they see what the actual sewer bill is.
Well, they're still well below what their maximum allowable rent is, but when we do the rental chart, before we were charging, we were saying, oh, well, the tenant's paying for the sewer, so now the maximum rent you can charge for this would end up being lower. So when they were like, oh, okay, they're not paying the sewer anymore, so their maximum allowable rent changed. But you are correct, but it is still well,
so they're still within the allowable.
There's still about two, you know, for the largest house, there's still about like $250 less than what the maximum allowable rent is. So
we don't care that it looks like a little con. We just need to stay within the dollar amount that's allowable.
The legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're following the legislation.
But all we care about necessarily is that it's within that dollar mm-hmm. amount that's allowable.
Mm-hmm. That's all we're responsible. Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah. So I mean, annually, like when you're in an apartment complex, they usually, you know, could increase your rent by $10 a month. But we just make sure that every lease we receive, their rent that they're paying is less than what the maximum allowable rent.
Okay.
So next is Darley Green. So Darley Green is not officially a workforce housing community. They were kind of the first, you know, to do something similar to this. The workforce housing was based on the agreement with Darley Green. So unlike all the other neighborhoods, there's a 15-year affordability period for the home buyers. There's a deed restriction that goes on their property that they have to live there for 15 years. Darley Green is only 10 years. So according to the agreement with Darley Green, they can offer workforce housing units on site, with 67% of them must be home ownership, and they can also offer off-site rental and for sale units. According to the agreement, the total homes planned were 1,225, making the required workforce housing units 245. I have a little asterisk next to it because they have updated their record plan, and now they're only required, you know, they're only planning to build 877 units. Okay, so therefore, the workforce housing units needs to be updated to reflect the new numbers, but that is kind of in limbo right now, and the Department of Land Use is reviewing, you know, a lot of their options. The Department of Land Use has frozen all of their building permits because according to their calculations, they are past, you know, where they should be. So they've frozen their building permits. So really, the only houses they're selling right now are workforce housing at Darley Green. So this is just an example of one. It's the Emerson model. They're kind of like a condo. There is a condo fee. There's a monthly condo fee that they pay. Whether you're in this model or any of the models, I've discovered through my annual monitoring that they do charge an additional like condo fee. So the market rate for these are $230 and $230,000, $840,000. Okay, so the current status of the housing, like I said, the Department of Land Use has stopped issuing the building permits. Okay, the original agreement was written based on a plan submitted showing 1226. That's the right number. A REIT subdivision plan was approved by Land Use, changing the total units to 877. The recalculation shows Darley Green has passed the first benchmark, and a path forward will be determined by the Department of Land Use. They have sold 6 units, and there are 2 sales currently pending for Darley Green. Goldsboro Farms. Goldsboro Farms is located in Townsend off on Fieldsboro Road. According to their agreement, they can offer rentals or for sale units on site to low or moderate, which is 80% AMI or 120% AMI. Currently, there are no units available. The first phase of the development was Ryan Homes, and they've completed that phase. Handler is going to take over. That's who the actual developer is, not the, you know, so they're going to take over as builder as well. So there's 143 homes total planned, and there's supposed to be 13 workforce housing units. So that's the same thing. They submitted a re-subdivision plan, so that's why that doesn't equal 20%. So this is an example of what Handler is advertising on their website for Goldsboro Farms. So that's the Falston 2 model. You know, 2010 square feet, 3 bedroom, 2.5 bath. The market rate is $298,900. So you see here, the maximum sales price for someone who makes 80% or below AMI, the maximum they can pay for a house is $248,700. So that would be a pretty big discount in the price of that house if someone was able to qualify. And then if someone was, you know, moderate income, the maximum price they could go up to is $398,000. So the current status of the housing for Goldsboro Farms, 4 units have been sold, and they've all been sold to moderate income. Okay, so 7 units of the 13 units required, 7 of them must be sold to low-income households per the staging plan. And like I said, Handler Homes is going to be handling the next phase of building.
So, can I ask a question?
Sure.
So if they have to sell 7 units to low-income, do they have houses that are lower in price than the one? So the builder takes the $50,000 hit on each of the 7 that he sells.
Yeah, and I guess I should probably, because according to their plan, they can offer them for rent or for sale. So if they offer them for sale, there's a 15-year deed restriction, and they would take a hit on the price.
Right.
So we're asking, if I was a betting person, I would bet that they're probably going to try and do for rent, and do the 25-year, or they might. I don't know, but according to their agreement, they can offer rentals or for sale on site. So they haven't said what they were doing, but that's what I would probably guess.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. But that's what they're showing on the website mm-hmm. right now. That's not to say that I know, if I remember correctly, with the workforce housing, the houses are supposed to have the appearance, but that doesn't mean they can't have one. They'll market with lesser amenities inside as far as the quality of the cabinets, the quality of the carpet, mm-hmm. and things like that. So they may have a marketable one.
Well, all of their, you know, it's their, all of the type of construction, you know, the things that they use, it has to be comparable to every other unit that they use. So what I did is I just went on their website and found their cheapest single family house. You know, there's a lot more models that are larger and cost more, but this one I just went for their cheapest one, yeah. But regardless of the model that they choose, if they're moderate income or low income, that's the prices that they can't go over. So that changes quarterly.
So can anybody, if they can't go over 248.7, mm-hmm. I would imagine that the builder is not going to, he's going to have to designate which houses are workforce housing, because why would you want, I mean, if that's the lowest, you're already losing $50,000 on that house.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to lose any more?
Mm-hmm.
So they can designate
mm-hmm.
which ones they want to sell as workforce to lose the least.
Mm-hmm.
Councilman Spiling?
No, I'm...
Are you good?
Okay.
He's just agreeing with me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next is High Hook Farms. It's located in Middletown, and it's on Vance Neck Road. Okay, so according to High Hook Farms agreements, they can offer rentals and for sale units on-site or off-site to moderate income households. That's less than 120% AMI. Currently, they're offering on-site for sale units. Okay, total homes planned for High Hook Farms is 390, and workforce housing units are 78. So this is an example of their Mozart model. This is a townhouse. It's approximately 1,900 square feet, three bedrooms, two baths. Market rate is 240. The maximum allowable sales price for any three bedrooms, since they're just a moderate income development, they could sell houses up to $398,000. This maximum allowable sales price is a chart. It changes quarterly. We go by like what the interest rate is at this time. We look up what someone would possibly pay for their housing insurance. So there's a lots of different things that can change. So these numbers could go down or up, depending. Okay, so the current status of housing in the High Hook Farms, there are 17 units have been sold to below 120% AMI households. I'd like to point out and commend High Hook Farms that they've also sold 6 units to households below 80% AMI. They're not required to sell houses to, you know, households that are below 80% AMI, but they have been able to sell 6 units. There are currently 15 units that are pending for sale in High Hook Farms. So of their 78 units required, they are 30% complete. Ironside Crossing is new. They're located in Newark, Delaware on Ironside Road, like kind of by Welsh Track Road. According to their agreement, Ironside Crossing can offer rentals and for sale units on site to low, less than 80% AMI, and moderate, less than 120% AMI income households. Currently, they are offering on-site for sale units, okay? There's 20 homes that are planned, and 4 of those units must be workforce housing units. 2 of those 4 must be for less than 80% AMI, and 2 of those 4 must be for less than 120% AMI. So, current status of their, you know, of housing is that they're currently under construction, and again, you know, just to show you, that's the maximum allowable sales price for three bedrooms. What I've heard the builder is going to do, the lows are going to be the townhomes, and then the moderates would be in the twins. And we reviewed their agreement, and there's nothing that says they can't do that, so. So next we're at Mara's Landing. Okay, so according to the agreement, Mara's Landing can offer rentals and for sale units on site to low or moderate income households. They're currently offering on site rental units. There's 27 homes planned, and 6 of those are supposed to be workforce housing. So this is an example of the workforce housing unit. It's approximately 2,000 square feet, three bedrooms, two baths, one car garage. They're currently renting for $1,850. That's if someone is moderate income or below 120% AMI. But the maximum they can charge if someone is 80% or below is $1,350 a month. Currently, they're in violation. The developer has submitted an amendment to move 3 units off-site to Grubbs Landing Road. There is some discussion about the language in their agreement, but basically land use is who is to issue the decision on whether to allow that or not. Currently, per their staging plan, they must have 3 units rented to low income, which is below 80% AMI households. They currently only have 1. 3 units must be rented to moderate income, 81%, so 120% AMI households. They currently have 3. But the only thing that's different with Mira's Landing, and I've never seen it on any other plan, is their lots are specified, like this lot has to be low, this lot has to be moderate. So of the lots that are specified on their plan, only 2 of them are in the right spot. You know what I mean? So there's 1 that's a moderate, but it's it's in a low identified unit. So, but they're 100% complete, and we're just waiting for the Department of Land Use to issue a decision on whether or not they can move some units off-site. Ponds of Odessa. It's located in Middletown. It's on Vance Neck Road. It's right next to High Hook Farms. There's interconnectivity between the two developments. And according to the agreement, Ponds of Odessa can offer rentals and for sale units on-site to moderate income, less than 120% AMI households. They're currently offering on-site for sale units. So of the homes planned, 280, 20 of them must be workforce housing units.
There's a driveway missing.
That's the model home.
I just want to note that we're supposed to start the next meeting at 4 o'clock.
Okay, we're almost done. So again, real fast, that's the Massey's model, that's how many bedrooms, that's the market rate, that's the maximum they can charge according to the sales price chart. That's an example of their single family, and you know, square footage, bedroom size, market rate, and the maximum sales price. Current status of the housing, 1 unit has been sold, and it was actually sold to a household that made less than 80% AMI. We have 2 units that are currently pending sale. So right now they're just 5% complete of their 20 units, but that should go up shortly. I think this is our last one. Preserve at Robinson Farms. It's located, actually that's not right, I'm sorry. It's located in Townsend off of Fieldsboro Road. And according to their agreement, Preserve at Robinson Farms, I'll have to double check on that, but they can offer rentals and for sale on site to low and moderate income households. That's correct. They're currently offering on site for sale units. Of their 476 homes planned, 65 of them are to be workforce housing units. So that's just an example of their model. That's the Somerset model, and that comes with 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths. Market rate is $216,500. Those are the maximum allowable sales prices. And then the current status of the housing, 1 unit has been sold to a below 120% AMI household, and there are currently 2 sales pending. So if there's 66 units, they're just 2% complete. Reserve at Beck's Pond. This is an apartment complex. It's located in Newark, Delaware on Salem Church Road. According to their agreement, they can offer rental units on site to low or moderate income households. Of the 240 units, 48 of them are to be workforce housing. And just real quickly, their market rate is $1,170 to $1,245 according to our maximum affordable rent. The max they can charge is $1,180 and $1,820 depending on your income. And then again, this is their 2 bedroom, $1,325 to $1,400 is their market rate. If you're low, the maximum someone could pay is $1,310 a month and $2,030 a month. And then again, that's their 3 bedroom market rate, $1,525 to $1,600. If someone is low income, then the max they would pay is $1,440 a month. And then again, all 48 units are rented. That's how they're broken down according to the building. And they're 100% complete and 100% in compliance. Any questions?
Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. When I look at the 5 out of 10, 50% that's in my district, and I know where all of them are exactly located and what they're doing, but it appears that and it's pretty consistent throughout the county, but I'm just talking about the ones that are in my district. You're looking at only 34 have been sold, 27 of them in High Hook. So, I mean, 79% of five developments, okay, is in one development.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple questions. How are they more successful in selling workforce housing product than the other four?
It's a good question. I can say that they also have more units available than the other developments do. They currently, you know, I send other developments to High Hook Farms to check them out and see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
What they are doing is offering $15,000 in upgrades for free. I think the reason why they're doing that is because it helps with the like retail or like, you know, if someone's trying to do an appraisal, you know, this house isn't lower price, it's the same price, but it just has more upgrades in it. But they're really doing a great job and really selling out in High Hook Farms.
Well, and I guess it's somewhat disappointing to see that you have four other developments that out of 34, mm-hmm. 27 of them are in one out of four developments. Seems like the majority are rentals and everything, so I'm not quite sure that there should be some sort of, try to get a handle on, you know, how they're successful in one development and not the others.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we don't have any requirements that other developments have to offer the same type of things.
Mm-mm. No, the only thing we make sure is that the maximum sales price is not higher than, you know.
Right. But at the end of the day, out of five developments, only one has sold a mm-hmm. pretty good number, and the others are like zero, one, mm-hmm. one pending.
Yeah, the other one, Goldsboro Farm, that used to be Orion Homes before, in the first phase it was Orion Homes, which mm-hmm. is the same builder as High Hook Farms. So they were able to get four workforce housing sales done. So
now, are they permitted to rent all of their workforce housing?
Most of them are. They do have that. If they do decide to rent, then the affordability period goes to 25 years. So like Bayberry, I'm going to be monitoring them for 25 years. Whereas if someone's purchasing, then I'm only monitoring them for 15 years.
Councilman Bell, would you like, we're running a bit short of time, but
no,
I'm just
fine.
Wondering.
I have the questions that I need answered at this point, but.
I was going to say, we could ask Ms. Rizzo to come back at the next community mm-hmm. services meeting if that would make sense to everyone to ask more questions.
I'm fine with it. I think the questions that I have concerning my district and the five developments, I could probably work
sure.
with community services
absolutely.
To try and get mm-hmm. further answers. I'm okay.
Mr. Street?
Well, I just think this whole operation functionally is flawed on the surface. I think it's something we as a government need to look at. You've got community services responsible for what it's doing, and you got land use doing the regulate. That, to me, that just flies in the face of good government and common sense, and who, if there's a dispute between the two of the departments, who's ultimate decision making? So I think that's something that needs to be considered. And two, y'all need to know, and has nothing to do with the county, but in one of those workforce housing developments, what folks who were buying were told was, this is going to be the period of time when there's going to be regular marketing, and this is going to be the time when workforce housing comes, and the initial homeowners were advised to get in and then get out before the workforce housing development started. And I know that for a fact because some of them did get out. And so we're communicating one thing, and real estate folks are communicating something completely different.
There are no words.
And the one in my district's a disaster.
I mean,
I know that for a fact. So
I think we need to bring this up again at the next community services meeting. I think we'll need a follow-up. Yes, Mr. Hollins. Yeah.
Well, if you need more time, there's only a couple items on executive committee meeting. So there's nothing of any urgency there. There's two items there. So
since you're chairing it, okay.
Well, I do want to point out that we do outreach to the realtors. We've gone to the Board of Realtors and talked with real estate agents that are part of that. We do, you know, we have a table at our Delaware State Housing Authority's home buyer fair that they have. We were thinking of doing kind of like an information session about all of our affordable housing programs to get all the real estate agents, all the, you know, mortgage financing people, all of the interested parties, to let them know about all of the programs that New Castle County has to offer for, you know, affordable housing.
And again, I'm not being critical of the department. I'm just telling you, I know for a fact, what at least in one instance, real estate folks were telling potential homeowners, and that in fact came to fruition.
That's
nothing to do with us. It's just the as far as I'm concerned, drastically mischief on the part of those folks who were so communicating.
Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just go back to the question on, for buying the home, you're locked in for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
What is it for the apartments?
25.
25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if I can add, I mean, it requires...
This is Ms. Hanson.
I'm sorry, Sophia Hanson, Community Services. Both the homeownership and the rental requires a lot of staff work because you're monitoring, you know, 15 years out, and then you add with the rental, that's a 25-year commitment. So we're doing annual certifications and inspections.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
I thought that the original workforce housing program was 15 years. Was that not changed in the last vote down to 7 or 10 or something like that?
It was
10.
For the moderately priced dwelling units?
Yes.
That's a new program.
So these are just all under the old program. Mm-hmm.
Sophia Hanson, Community Services, this is just workforce housing. So we'll have the rental program and the home ownership, some with exceptions, such
right.
as Darley Green, which has the 10-year
right.
requirement. And then we'll have a new program that will be monitored with new rules and regulations.
So the new program has been in for a year,
mm-hmm.
2 years? What, a year?
About a year.
Mm-hmm. And you have... Is this just not part of the report, or do you have nothing in that? No one has gone
there,
into that yet.
We have one plan that I can speak of, the Camarino property
yeah.
up in Hocaston. That's a rezoning, so that's, you know, mandatory. They must provide
right.
moderately priced.
So that will be the first?
That will be the first moderately priced volume.
Well, Mara's Landing was the first in this program, and you saw how well that worked.
Any further questions for now? All right. Thank you very much. We also have two ordinances that will be introduced tonight. I believe that my colleague, Mr. Hollins, will be carrying those ordinances. So, Mr. Hollins, would you like to speak to them, or should I?
Well, I think that... the presentation that was done earlier pretty much
yes.
explains everything that's happened with these two ordinances, and they're just being introduced tonight and voted on in 2 weeks from now.
All right. Thank you. Anything else under other? Yes, Mr. Street.
Briefly, I said, and I told you, as my colleague on council did, as soon as it still went up in the air for the library, I was going to be fighting this aggressively for senior high rise. Senior living in the area, be it high-wise or otherwise, as I fought for the library. Well, still's in the air. Now, when I initially said that, the county executive said, you don't have to fight for it. We're just going to do it. Now, I don't know what the position of the next administration is going to be on that, but I trust that until administration changes, we're going to continue to move forward, and then if necessary, new administration wants to make a change, and I'll pick that fight when the time comes. But going forward, since it still is in the air, I'm letting everybody know, and I'm continuing on that path. I hope that the administration that currently this is going to continue on that path, and we'll see what happens with the new administration. But I'm going to move this as aggressively toward that as I can.
Thank you. Sophia Hansen, Community Services. Well, MAPCO is doing a transportation study for the Route 9 corridor in a redevelopment plan. And it does call for senior housing. I think it was mid-rise, so 55 to 60 units for the Route 9 corridor. And they have possibilities of locations. One was on the Innovation Campus, and some others are along the corridor. I think the findings of the report will be made public in November. But that's something our department is working on with Will MAPCO.
Thank you.
Well, the need, as Will MAPCO already pointed out, and I understand they're in the process of making recommendations, but the need was crystal clear, and was based on merit and need, and that's why I took the position that I did, and I look forward to the complete study and see how we progress, and you know, I hope we continue on, and I don't have to be in a fight from the door with the new administration, but that's up to the new administration.
Thank you. Any public comment? Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Take it away, Councilman Hollins.